morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of The Last Podcast You'd Want. How we doing, everybody? Steve here coming at you with another episode, and today we bring comic book creator, artist, Mr. Scott Kurtz. Scott, how we doing today?
We're doing fantastic.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
For those of you that don't know, Scott has been doing online comics since, oh man, I had it written down.
1998. Yeah.
And was that starting with the online comics or was that just comics in general?
No, I had wanted to be a syndicated cartoonist because before the web, that's how you did it. But when the web came along, I started posting my comic strips to the internet and learned pretty quickly that I was building an audience there. And then it kind of organically grew into its own thing. So I was kind of one of the early pioneers of web comics. Now all comics are web comics, and they're actually leaving the web. Everything's now mobile. So everything's mobile now, and social media. So
sure.
I mean, technically still the web, but it's not like a website. I don't think anyone cares about that anymore.
I have a friend who is a comic book artist that still likes to put it out on print.
Oh, we do too. Yeah, we still do print. Yeah. None of that changed. people still like holding books and collecting books. I love it. I still love drawing on paper, even though I do all my daily work digitally. But the internet's such a great way to get your work out, your content, whatever it may be, to such a large and diverse audience. And then the people that really stick with you and become mega fans, they want the artifact for their shelf. And so eventually when you collect it, you get to sell them the physical object. Yeah. And it's always good to have those. It's always fun to have the physical object. So
it is. And somewhere in a box in my dad's house, I have the first three complete collections that you had put out. And the only one that stands out in my mind is it's Brent, right? Brent and yep. and a panda bear.
Yeah.
On the cover, like a big like
right.
comic drawn, like
yeah.
That always sticks with my mind when I think player versus player. When I think
thank PvP. You.
Let's get into it with the show with a question that I always like to start with, and that's: have you ever walked out of a movie in the movie theater?
You know, I thought about this because I got your questions ahead of time. Thank you for that, by the way. It's, you know, it's very, very, I love movies. I love watching them and talking about them and dissecting them. But it's hard to pick favorites because there's just, you know, so many different parts of your life that are associated with movies. So, but anyway, I was trying to think, and I can only think of two times I've wanted to walk out of a movie. I don't think I've ever left a movie. The first time I wanted to walk out of a movie was when I was a kid and my cousin Laura took me to see Jaws.
Oh, okay.
And I was petrified. I was unable to move, terrified. And I thought, and don't ask me why, because I must have been, I don't know, 10. I didn't think you were allowed to leave a movie once it started. So I didn't ask to leave.
Sure. You just thought you were stuck there.
I just tried to get through it. And then afterwards, I'm like, I wish you could leave the movies. They need to make it secretly. She's like, we could have left. Were you scared? I'm like, yeah, Laura. But the only time I would have left in a movie as an adult is we got a free screening for the movie Contact. And I read Carl Sagan's book Contact at a very, very eventful moment in my life. It was after my mom passed. I was 24 and my friend gave me Carl Sagan's books to kind of help me get over the loss of my mother.
Sure.
And ground me. And Contact really is Carl Sagan's kind of manifesto for, here's a fictional story, an example of what would have to happen for me to believe in God. And I wanted to see the movie so badly. I was such a fan of the book. We show up to this free screening of Contact and are told, surprise, it's a double feature. Before Contact, you must sit through and review Batman and Robin.
Oh.
And we were like, okay. And like 10 minutes into that movie, I wanted to leave. But if I left, I didn't get to stay and watch Contact.
Now I'm trying to think really quick. Batman and Robin. That's going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger and Uma Thurman, right?
And Uma Thurman and that's Clooney.
That's Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy.
Oh, it was so awful. And then we sat through Contact and the ending disappointed me. So it was a double whammy.
There you go.
I should have walked out.
Contact is the earliest memory I have of Jake Busey.
Yeah.
I have this right. I have this thing in my head where
he sabotaged the machine.
He did, where I can take any actor / actress and I can tell you the first movie that I remember seeing them.
Yeah.
And for Contact, Jake Busey. Jake Busey is the first
Yeah, movie. Yeah.
It's either that or PCU.
He was in PCU?
He's one of the stoners.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I need to watch that again.
You'd be surprised the people that are in that movie.
There's a lot of people in that. Piven and Spade's in it too, right?
Mm-hmm. So is Jon Favreau.
No shit.
Jon Favreau is Don't Be That Guy. Piven says to Favreau, you're going to wear the shirt of the band you're going to see. Gutter is Jon Favreau's character.
Oh my gosh. I got to watch that again.
I love it. And I just forgot her name, Jessica Walters. She's the dean.
She's the dean.
I love PCU.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Love it so much, went out of my way to find the actress that played Moonbeam.
No way.
Got her on my show. Yeah.
Becky. Are you serious?
Yeah, Becky Thayer.
Wow.
Yeah, she was also on the TV show Weeds, which was another reason I wanted to get her on. I was a big show of Weeds. So
rad.
Big fan of Weeds. So you wanted to walk out of Batman and Robin, but you couldn't because of Contact. But the end of Contact also disappointed you.
Yeah, because in the book, the story of Contact takes place over decades. And so, the spoiler alert for a, I don't know, 20-year-old movie, 20-plus-year-old movie.
Because that movie came out in like 97.
Yeah.
That movie came out when I was in high school, because I remember watching that movie in my marine science biology class for some reason.
Yeah, that makes sense. So in the movie, or in the book, when they find the message and realize it's a machine that they're supposed to build, the big question is, do they build it or not? Because it could be a bomb, it could be a weapon, it could be something terrible.
Sure.
But over the course of decades of them figuring out how to build the machine, technology advances faster than it would have, because there's now all this new stuff they've learned from the plans they got from the signal from space. And so at the end of the movie, Ellie is much older and she's at a different point in her life. Technology has changed so much that computers are way, way, way more advanced than they were in the 90s, or would have been had it been the 90s without the space signal.
Sure.
And so in the end of the book, when she takes the trip that for everyone else just was a second and she never left, but for her, she was gone. In the book, it was five people that went. It wasn't just her. There were like five different representatives. Everyone saw someone different that they knew. Ellie saw her father.
Sure.
And the message was, okay, so we sent you a message using math as a language. We found a message in math and we think it's from God. So inside of math itself
is a message.
Is a pattern. And we have gathered a conglomerate of races throughout the universe to work on solving this problem because we think it's going to lead us to God. And Earth is ready. So we sent you the signal. And if you can build the machine, then you're ready to take your first steps towards joining this coalition of deciphering it. So when Ellie returns to Earth in the book, she has computers that are now way more advanced than they should be, looking for patterns in math. And she has one computer dedicated to looking for patterns in pi, which is an infinite number. And right as she gets a letter from her stepfather that she found, that was sent to her after his death, the computer signals that it found a pattern and it draws symbol for nitrogen, the very first element. And then she knows at the end, she goes, okay, I believe in God. And that's how the book ends. So I was ready for the movie to be similar, and then it wasn't, and I was pissed.
Sure. I that has happened to me with one. I can only think of one book that I read, and it's nowhere near Contact, that I was so excited for the movie because I loved the book so much. And then it was after watching that movie that I was just like, okay, so no movie representation is ever going to really like come up to my expectations for a book.
Yeah, it really has to. I think that you have to. It's a different art form. It's a different form of storytelling, and I get that. But I do think that a lot of times you can tell when studios decide the audience isn't smart enough for this.
Yeah, 100%.
And they're wrong. I think they're 99.9% of the time they're wrong. But yeah, that's just me.
I think that movies, I think that movies are too simple. There are a lot of movies that I will go to see that 20 minutes in, I've figured out the entire plot line. I know how the movie is essentially going to end. I was relatively surprised. I went and saw Old last night.
Oh yeah, how was that?
I really liked it.
Really?
I have to say, I didn't know this walking in. Not an original M. Night Shyamalan script, based off of a graphic novel.
Oh, well, okay, that makes sense.
So
I wonder if the ending was the same in the graphic novel.
I'm not sure. I haven't. Now that I know it's a graphic novel, though, I kind of want to read it to see.
Let me ask you this. I'll try to make this non-spoiler. Did you feel the twist was a commentary on recent events?
No.
Okay.
It's so hard to describe the twist because without spoiling it for me, it was a twist that wasn't a twist. Like, some people might understand what it was and see it coming. Other people. It's so hard to describe. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I liked his last one, The Visit. The one with the kids that went to go visit their grandparents.
Oh, I haven't, you know what? I haven't watched a non,
Oh no, that wasn't his last one. His last one was Glass, and I hated that one. His last one
was Glass, and it was terrible.
And I hated that one. I really enjoyed Glass until the twist. The twist is what ruined the film for me.
He doesn't need to always have a twist.
It's true.
Unbreakable was really great. We didn't need Glass. I think Split was pretty good too.
Split was great. If they hadn't have ended Glass, for me personally, I don't know about you, but it's long enough ago that I could talk about it. If they hadn't have killed them,
yeah,
it would have been a really good film.
Probably.
If it had been Bruce Willis able to go out and find other superheroes to battle these people, and then maybe like Sam Jackson leaving with Jason Isaac to form their own like Legion of Doom, like,
yeah,
having it in that way with possibilities of more films, and then Sarah Pauly fucks off and does whatever she wants. It's the mere fact that they kill them that it ruined the film for me.
Yeah, no, it was disappointing.
But I do take it back. The only, I did, once again, it's not a book. I was going to say the only thing that I have read that the adaptation is spot on, and that's because the creator was involved, is Sin City.
Yeah, that's pretty, 300 is pretty close too.
Yeah.
I
haven't read 300.
I'll tell you what. So I'm a big fan of the Jack Reacher novels.
Okay.
I love all the Lee Child novels. I love those.
How are they in comparison to the movies? I mean, how are the movies in comparison to the books?
So the first Jack Reacher movie is based on the book One Shot. The first Jack Reacher is Killing Floor. I think it's called One Shot. The Jack Reacher is the first novel adaptation I've read that I thought was cleaner in telling story-wise than the novel. I actually read the novel after I saw the movie.
Okay.
So the movie introduced me to Jack Reacher, and then I went and devoured all the books. And when I got to One Shot, I skipped it because I've seen it so many times. But then I went back and read it, and I was like, this is not as clean. I don't like it as much. Why? It's just a much cleaner story in the movie. But yeah, that's the one movie I liked better than the book is Jack Reacher one shot. Yeah. Anyway, the second Jack Reacher movie is trash.
Haven't seen either of them.
Watch the first one. It's well worth your time.
All right. I think I have both of them on Vudu, and I have downtime on the job I normally work. So I'll have to check it out.
Pop yourself some popcorn and just enjoy that.
I always like to go opposite spectrum is what I always like to call it, from a movie that you couldn't stand to a movie that you could watch every day, whether it's having a movie on as background noise for cleaning the house, whether you're flipping the proverbial channel and you come across a movie, regardless where it's at, you're watching it, you know, a movie
yes.
so much that you could tolerate it.
So my wife and I, we have actually two movies that if it's on, no matter where, what we're doing, if we're flipping through, if it's on, we kind of stop and say, we'll just watch a little bit and then end up finishing it. The first one is A Knight's Tale.
Good one.
We will watch that movie if it's on, no matter what, front to back. The second one is this Soderbergh movie. It's Out of Sight.
Oh, Jennifer Lopez.
Jennifer Lopez and Clooney. Yeah, it's based
Bing on. Rames.
Yep, it's based on an Elmore Leonard novel.
Okay.
And it's just expertly done. Everything about that movie is deliberate. The color palette in that movie is deliberate. The use of color to establish mood in that movie is sublime. And the writing's great because it's straight out of probably Leonard's dialogue. And the performances are all wonderful. It's just a sexy fucking movie. Sorry, I didn't.
No, you can curse. You can curse. That's okay.
Yeah, Don Cheadle's in it and is great. Clooney and Ving and Jennifer Lopez are great. And what's really awesome, what's great about Out of Sight is that there's a character in the movie played by Michael Keaton. He plays an FBI agent or a DEA agent. I don't remember. But simultaneous to the filming of Out of Sight, another adaptation of an Elmore Leonard novel was being filmed. Tarantino was doing Jackie Brown. Jackie Brown is an adaptation of the Elmore Leonard novel Rum Punch, which features the same character, and Tarantino had cast Michael Keaton as that character, that DEA agent. So Steven finds out about it and says, we gotta get him to play the same character here in this. And Tarantino's like, yeah, we gotta do it. And so Keaton got to play the same character in two movies.
That's
amazing. Unrelated to each other. Out of Sight is the other one. I'll watch Out of Sight whenever it's on. And most recently, a movie that I could sit down and watch, and I try not to do it because I'm worried that I'm going to wear it out. If I start Infinity War, I will go straight through to the end of Endgame.
I am right there with you. I love watching Thor Ragnarok.
Yep. Yep.
And I watch Ragnarok, and then let's just go
right to Infinity War.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Disney Plus is right there. So it's a real problem because I grew up a Marvel zombie. I have such a intense love of the feeling of the Marvel universe, comic universe, and the crossing of characters into different titles, and Infinity War and Endgame was just the perfect culmination of 10 years of movies and just a payoff to so many, a decade of investment of story, and movies, some great, some imperfect, but just like the comics, faults and all, it's Marvel. And it's so every step of that journey even if you go to Ragnarok, but it just Infinity War through Endgame, every single moment is satisfying. Like everything about that is satisfying. So I got to be real careful because I will wear it out, but I can't tell you how many times, especially if I have to draw something and I can just put movies on my second monitor, I'll just let it run through both those movies. It's sure. It's a problem. It's a real problem.
My go-to, because I like to write when I don't have absolute writer's block, Breakfast Club. Breakfast Club is always my background movie.
That's fascinating to me. How old are you?
38. I'll be 39 in November.
So what year were you born?
82. Yeah, movie came out like when I was a baby.
So I guess my question to you is, because for me, the Breakfast Club, so I was the age of the characters in that movie when that movie came out, right? Junior high, high school.
Sure.
So for us, it was a big coming of age movie for us. And it was like it's a touchstone for us. And it, for me, that is so steeped in the 80s. I feel like the concurrent generations after mine wouldn't appreciate it. It makes me very excited to hear that you love that movie.
Oh yeah. I love that movie so much. I knew a gentleman that did a midnight series at a local theater, and he did Breakfast Club, and it was like, oh, well, that was one of the ones that like I couldn't miss. And it was so great when you went there, they actually gave you a little sack lunch. They gave you a half a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. No. They gave you like a handful of Captain Crunch.
That's awesome.
There were a couple like peanut butter and jelly, like crackers. Like, yeah, they give you a little sack to go in with it. I like a lot of older movies. My favorite movie of all times is Blues Brothers.
Yeah. That's a common answer to that question.
Like it's got the music, it's got the cast. Like what's not to love, you know what I mean? So I'm completely blanked.
No, it's fine.
Infinity Wars and Marvel.
We're talking about movies we could watch all the time.
Sure. but no, I understand the possibly burning it out. I love Marvel as a whole with everything they have done. The only issues I have at all are with Captain Marvel. And my only issue, and people automatically are like, what? And I'm like, no. It's the fact that Captain Marvel is supposed to take place in the 90s and Iron Man is supposed to take place somewhere in the 2000s. And Agent Coulson doesn't have a proper name for S.H.I.E.L.D. and Iron Man. But then in Captain Marvel, they're like in the 90s. I'm
like, oh, it's
S.H.I.E.L.D. for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the minute they said that, I'm just like, motherfuckers. Like, you made this movie like 10 years after you established that they didn't know what S.H.I.E.L.D. was. That and no one, man, I racked my brain on it. Ant-Man and the Wasp conflicts with Infinity Wars because now hear me out. Scott's on house arrest and the movie ends with him getting off of house arrest,
right,
doing the drive-in in the backyard, and then the mid-credit scene is them with the machine on top of the parking lot when the snap happens and Scott goes into the quantum realm. Right. How long do you think it would have taken them to get the machine for the proper rigging in the truck? You understand what I'm saying? Like they didn't have the rig in the truck to begin with. They had to all, I understand Pym has a machine that can alter the size of things, but to get it in there, to get everything, to get in the quantum realm for the whole thing. At some point I would have liked to have seen a TV in the background saying like alien craft in New York City. You know what I mean? Like this closed today, Squidward. Like the time frame.
That's true. Because
the time frame in which everything is happening. Like people are like, oh, well, they can't keep a tab on Scott if everything is happening, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, if you have Scott and you have Clint, you have Hawkeye and they're on house arrest, you're going to know how long the house arrest is for in case you need to call them in for something. Like they're Avengers. Like,
no, but at some point during Ant-Man and the Wasp,
there's no mention of Infinity Wars.
Right. At some point, New York is visited by a spaceship during Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That they tell you about?
No, but that's the way the timeline works.
But that's what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is because Infinity War is supposed to happen within what, 24 to 48 hours?
Right.
Meaning that Scott got off house arrest and then they automatically made the machine in the van to go into the quantum realm.
Right. So here's what I want you to do. Back in the 70s, Stan Lee came up with an idea. It was called Stan Lee's No Prize. Have you ever heard of the No Prize?
I have not heard of the No Prize.
Okay. So when someone inevitably would detect or find a continuity error in the books, they would write in and say, I found a mistake. For example, at some point during Ant-Man and the Wasp, a spaceship visits New York and it's never mentioned in the movie. They would have been aware of that.
Sure.
So you made a mistake there. What Stan suggested was, rather than write us and say, ha ha ha, you made a mistake. If you write us and say, in Ant-Man and the Wasp, there should have been a mention, but probably what happened was they were hiding out and they were avoiding stuff. And so they didn't see any news posts. Then Stan would say, you're absolutely right. That's what happened. You win a no prize. And you would receive in the mail a envelope that said, you're the recipient of a Stan Lee no prize. And the envelope would be empty.
Oh man, that's amazing.
And so they're coveted. Like, you know, if someone has ever received the no prize, like if you have one of those somewhere, they'd be worth a lot of money.
Sure.
So you got to look at the movies that way too, because that's what Stan would want.
No, absolutely. It's literally, no, and in reality, it was one of those, like the meme, like I was falling asleep at like 3 a.m. and my brain is like, are you awake? And I was kind of like, yeah. And that's what my brain said. My brain was like, at the post-credit scene of Ant-Man and the Wasp. Yeah, like, and that's, is like, you bring up the thing, like they were in hiding and at some point that would have happened. But then he gets off house arrest and they have enough time to plan the shrinking theater in the backyard, meaning that would have to happen that night. And then the next morning, I could go about it.
Yeah.
Like that's how my mind works for movies. Like I can just keep going down hole upon hole upon hole upon hole.
Yeah.
But I do love Infinity Wars. I do love Endgame. And I do usually end up watching them back to back.
Yeah.
Like 100%. When it comes to movies, what are some movies that take you back to your childhood, to a more youthful time?
So if I want to go pre-teens, I thought about this. I have two answers for you.
Sure.
My childhood pre-teens, it's all Spielberg. And I know that, so I was born in 1971. I was 6 when Star Wars came out. I don't think I saw Star Wars in 77. I want to say that I saw the re-release in 80 or 81. For me, Spielberg is the touchstone of my childhood. All of his movies, E.T., Indiana Jones, Gremlins, Poltergeist, all of the stuff that he did back then, the John Williams, it all had a combination of the fantastical, adventure, and just a little bit of scary. Right? Like there was always a little bit of scary. E.T. was even a little bit scary for a kid. Indiana Jones had, you know, the snakes and the dead bodies, and Gremlins was scary.
The melting
face. Poltergeist was real scary, but we could handle it. He knew just the right amount of scary to put in. And it eventually led to the creation of the PG-13 rating. That was Spielberg's movies.
Of course.
It wasn't quite PG, but it wasn't quite R, so they came up with PG-13. But my last bit of youth before I was considered an adult and out on my own is for me is John Hughes, that which is problematic at best, because those movies
are pretty real. Yeah, they are.
They're very non-consensual and creepy and weird. And And then add on to that, that he was kind of creepy and weird about Molly Ringwald, and it's problematic. But John Hughes is like my teenage years. All those John Hughes movies, that teen, Ferris Bueller and Breakfast Club, and Pretty in Pink. I never really cared for 16 Candles, which is the most problematic of all of his movies. He also did...
Weird Science, right?
Weird Science. Also kind of problematic, but fun. I know that he wrote Christmas Vacation. I think he also wrote Vacation.
Okay. I know he produced Home Alone, or produced Home Alone.
He wrote Home Alone. He just didn't direct it.
Yeah, Christopher Columbus. I'll tell you what. I made that mistake. I had Michael... Maricino, I believe his name is. You might know him as Big Pete from The Adventures of Pete and Pete.
Right.
He's one of Macaulay Culkin's brothers in Home Alone.
Okay.
And on the podcast, I said, so what was it like working with John Hughes? Was he really nice guy? And he goes, I really didn't deal with him a lot. He was like, Christopher Columbus directed it. Hughes just wrote. And I was just like,
whoops.
That's one of those ones, you know, where you just, you know, where you think it's one director and it's just another.
Yeah.
But...
yeah, all the John Hughes stuff, man. That's my teen youth. Okay. But Spielberg's got me locked in pre-teen. All that stuff.
Spielberg was the first movie I saw in the theater. So my parents tell me as a baby.
Which one?
E.T. 82 in the drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a baby, nope. like freshly born baby, my parents going to the drive-in. It's probably why I'm so obsessed with movies.
Maybe. That's a good first movie, I'll tell you what.
Not the first movie I remember seeing in the theater, but first movie I saw in the theater.
Yeah.
With that, do you remember, as a child, is usually when this roundabout happens, do you remember the first movie to give you nightmares?
Oh, yeah. So the first movie to give me real nightmares was the Amityville Horror.
James Brolin
is in it. Yep. It's a terrible movie. And now if you were to watch it, it would be as far as level of scariness, it's like a bad made for TV movie. It really is. I know they've remade it a couple times.
With Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. So
it was all right. I saw it in the theater. I worked at a theater when it came out.
Yeah, the Amityville Horror. Okay.
They've done a lot of them. They did the Amityville Horror 2, The Possession, which actually has, upon me watching it for the first time, not knowing... it had an incestual storyline. Yeah, brother sister.
Oh wow, I did not know that.
The sister played by Diane Franklin, who you're probably going to know as either Monique from Better Off Dead or as one of the princesses from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Okay.
She's also from Last American Virgin.
So when that movie came out in 79, but around the 80s, cable TV was first introduced, and the people in my neighborhood who got cable, there was only one movie channel. It was HBO. I think Showtime came shortly after, but home box office was the big thing. And so you could watch movies all day because that's all home box office ran was movies, and they would run them over and over and over, sometimes in a row. And the Amityville Horror was a movie that we were not supposed to watch, right? It's a scary movie. But the thing that was going around school was that it was a true story. That this guy went nuts and murdered his family in this house.
Sure.
And said the devil made him do it. And so we had an opportunity to watch it. And we were watching it downstairs and just losing our mind, terrified. We were raised Catholic. So... there's a scene where I think James Brolin goes to a church to like beg for help, and the devil starts making the church like crack down the middle and the crucifix bleeds. And we're just like, oh shit, the devil is reaching him in the church. And then we heard our dad behind us. We heard my father behind us go, "This is the stupidest movie I've ever seen." We turn around and my dad's standing there with a cup of coffee, like he was walking past. We thought we were busted, right? Like we're in trouble. We're watching this forbidden movie. The only movie that went around my school as being the most dangerous movie to watch was Faces of Death.
Oh, I remember hearing about that as a kid, but I luckily never.
It's all fake. It's not real. It's not real. But anyway, the point is second in line to the Faces of Death with Amityville Horror for us. And so we thought, oh, shit, we're busted. And we turn around, we go, "What?" And he goes, "This movie's very, very stupid." And we're like, "It's terrifying." And he goes, "It's dumb." And I said, "Why is it dumb?" And he said, "God would never let that happen." And left the room. And, you know, from that point on, the movie wasn't scary anymore for the rest of the day. But I do remember it giving me nightmares. And my mom got real mad because my dad's like, "Oh, they were watching that Amityville movie." And she's like, "Why'd you let him finish watching it?" You know, he's like, "I didn't let him watch it. They were just watching it."
Sure, sure.
Yeah, that movie, you know, I was raised Catholic and I was told that magical things happened, good things, right? Like, if you're a good person, God rewards you. And if you confess your sins, you get to go to heaven and this water is holy and you put it on your forehead. Like, it's all Harry Potter shit when you're a kid.
Sure.
This movie was saying, well, the devil's got power too. Just as much as God. Yeah, watch out for him.
My father always liked to say I was, as an adult, I was raised Catholic, so I'm not religious now.
Yeah, yeah. That happens.
It does. It does.
Right, but yeah, no, that movie scared me in a way that a movie never had before. It wrecked me.
Sure, sure. As one can do as a young influential mind. And
that movie made me avoid watching The Exorcist until I was well an adult.
Okay. The movie that I always avoided as a child that I watched as an adult that I still think I watched too old was Seven. And I watched that at 23.
Yeah.
And I still think I was too young.
That is the answer to one of your upcoming questions.
Ah, well, let's continue on. And do you remember the first movie that you saw in the theater?
I don't know. I really don't know what movie I first saw in the theater.
That's okay.
I can remember two movies that I saw when I was in elementary school. And the reason why I remember them is because I was told by my father that I wasn't allowed to talk about it the next day at school because it would be very, very important.
Ooh, all right.
So I know that I saw Star Wars in a theater. I know that we came home from seeing Star Wars and my father was trying desperately to get across to my mother what he had just seen. Like, "You don't understand. This is... what we saw was unbelievable. You have to see it. We're going to go see it again." Like, he just, I remember my dad, we left that movie screaming. Like, we had to get home and tell my mom about it immediately. And he's like, "Honey, trust me." And she's like, "Oh, I don't like that stuff. You like that Star Trek stuff?" "Nope, honey, I'm telling you, this is the most amazing thing you've ever seen. We're going to watch it a million times." Like, I remember him losing his shit. So I know I saw Star Wars at the theater. Now, if that came out, if I saw that the year that it actually came out in 1977, I was six. But I don't know if that's the case because that would make my brother three. And I don't think you'd take a three-year-old to Star Wars. However, you might.
He might have been so.
It was re-released again in 80, 81, at which point I would have been 10. My brother would have been like six or seven. I want to say that. I want to say Star Wars is the first movie I remember seeing in theaters.
Okay.
If they took me to something prior to that, I don't remember what it was. It didn't make a lasting impression on me enough to remember.
Sure. Like for me, I know for a fact, like, so for me, the first movie I remember going to see in the theater is Ghostbusters 2.
Right.
It was either first or second grade. My mom took me out halfway through the day to go catch an afternoon showing. And it's also the first movie that I ran out of the theater. I did not, I personally did not know if I could stay or not. I did not care. The scene in the subway when the heads are on the pikes scared the living shit out of me. And I ran out. Funniest part, mom didn't chase after me.
Okay.
Didn't chase after me at all. I went running out to the lobby and I turned around. She was still just in the theater.
Yeah. Well, that was the time.
And I went, oh yeah, 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 yeah. I went, when I was in sixth grade, so 11 or 12 years old, Jurassic Park was out, and that was a PG-13 film. And I went to this movie theater so much that the employees would just let me go and watch it on my own. I would just, my parents would drop me off.
Yeah, all the time.
And I'd be like, Jurassic Park, and they'd give me my ticket, knowing I wasn't
13. We used to go to movies. I remember seeing, you could buy a ticket to a movie and sit there and watch the movie over and over. You didn't have to leave.
Oh, back in the, I wasn't around for those days, but I know of those.
We watched, it was a Dick Van Dyke Disney movie with, toys.
Mary Poppins?
Babes in Toyland. Yeah. We just watched that over and over. Yeah, I'm sure that I saw something Disney earlier. I'm sure I was taken to baby.
But Star Wars is a great one.
Star Wars is my first real theater. Now, my first independent theater experience, this is my second answer to this, was my buddy and I went and saw the first Ghostbusters, and we came home and we were just like, we could not stop talking about that movie. We went home and I called him up and we stayed up late talking about the movie, and then we went and saw it a bunch more times. I went to stay with a friend named Jans Dykehouse, and Jans's older brother, his brother was older than us, and they had a VHS of Wrath of Khan.
Ooh.
And they played the movie, and I was like, oh, I saw this in the theater with my dad, you know, because my dad introduced me to Star Trek as a kid. So we're watching it, and they could say the movie as the movie was happening. I'm like, how do you know what they're going to say? And they're like, we've seen this movie so many times, we can quote it. And I was like, whoa, you can learn a movie? Like, I just thought that was so cool they had done that. And so my buddy and I was like, we should go see Ghostbusters enough to learn the movie. Like Jans Dykehouse's brother did with Star Trek.
Are you excited for the new Ghostbusters movie?
Sure. I was excited for the female Ghostbusters movie. I didn't think it was very good.
I can tell you, upon watching the first trailer they put out, just the first teaser trailer, the first half a dozen times I watched it, I cried every time. Just pure tears of joy.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It'll be good. It'll be good that it's set in the same universe as the first movies.
And that is my only complaint with the female. The female version isn't that funny. It does have its funny moments.
It has funny moments.
It has a great cast. Leslie Jones is hilarious. Melissa McCarthy is a very talented individual. Kristen Wiig is beyond, like, she's one of the funniest female comedian actresses out there right now. Like, and then Kristen, I always forget the fourth one.
Kate McKinnon. Kate, she's amazing.
Yeah, like, it's four absolutely incredible comedic women. And then Chris Pratt to boot.
Hemsworth.
Oh, Hemsworth. Him too.
He's the person I had a problem with, other than, the plot.
Okay.
Yeah, don't make a movie. So one of the things that really bothered me was they decided they were going to make a new Ghostbusters movie that would be its own thing, which I was fine with. And it would be all girls. I had no problem with that. And the female cast was great. They're all funny. They all played well off each other. But then they brought in which if it was gender swapped, would be considered a really...
Janine.
No, stereotypical. It's the ditzy secretary.
Oh, sure.
That's eye candy. That's fucking stupid. Why is it okay to do it if it's a guy? Why is it okay if it's a guy? Why is that trope okay if it's a dude?
It's been done so long for the females.
For the females, maybe it's time for the guy to get a little taste of it. But guys don't care. It's not the same because guys aren't treated the same way.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. I would have liked, I liked him being dumb, and he is sexy. So it was kind of inevitable. But I liked the dumb receptionist. I just didn't think, anyway, that was my least favorite part of it. But no, I'm excited about Afterlife. It's sad that Harold Ramis is gone, but I'm excited about Aykroyd and Bill Murray and
Ernie Hudson.
Hudson being in it.
Yeah. Too. And Annie Potts.
Yeah, that was really exciting to see her.
Yeah.
To know that she and Egon had a family is kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially I mean, it was always kind of teased upon, but I mean, when you really think about it, I always thought it would have been Tully that she would have had a relationship with, especially after two.
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, but you know what? She could have had a relationship with both Egon and Tully. You know, it's every person's choice. I'm right there with you with Ghostbusters, though. For me, it was Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park is the movie that I saw continuously in the theater.
It could also be that Annie Potts is just someone who knew Egon. We haven't seen the movie yet, so it may not be that she was married to Egon.
This is true. It would be interesting.
No, she does call her. Does she call her mom? I don't remember.
Anyway. I watched the trailer once for the newest trailer they put out. I watched it once, and that's all I'm going to watch it. I watched the first teaser they put out. I won't go on it too much because I talk about it probably far too much than I should on this podcast, but I think that trailers nowadays give away too much.
They always do.
I was really excited for Ryan Reynolds' Free Guy, and then they showed like a trailer for it when we went to see Old, and I looked at my wife and I went, wow, I'm really excited for this movie. And then I saw the trailer and then I was like, wow, I guess I don't need to go see it in the theater now. They just give away too much, but I love going to the movies regardless. I've always loved going to the movies, and it's just such a fun experience.
That's a good question for your show, by the way. What was the last movie you went into blind and were completely surprised by? Because that's hard to do these days.
Scott, what was the last movie that you went into blind and was completely surprised by?
The Matrix.
Okay. Wow. That was
no one knew what it was.
That was a long time.
Nobody knew what the fuck it was going to be. We went to it and were blown away.
Oh, yeah. No, I saw it twice in the theater when I was in high school.
Because that was the same year that episode one came out. And afterwards, when driving home, I said, how is it that George Lucas made a movie and I hate it? And these guys came out of nowhere and made The Matrix. Like, maybe he's just, it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my whole life. Like, it was crazy. It shocked the hell out of me. I didn't know what it was. No one knew what it was going into it. Nobody.
Cabin in the Woods.
That's a good answer. That's true.
Cabin in the Woods. Had no idea.
It's a good answer. You know, it's a podcast recording day because my cul-de-sac is full of people putting on new roofs and doing yard work and anything that can possibly be loud and interrupt me recording something.
Well, I can tell you right now, I can't hear any of it.
So. Well, I'm glad. Thank God.
I hear my dogs barking in the back. So I know, like, I mean, usually, luckily my window is closed, but yeah, I work in a call center calling people all day. So the neighbor will always get his yard worked on as I'm like, hi, ma'am. Are you? Yeah. What do you feel is a movie that you, I think I even know what the answer is going to be.
Yeah.
What's a movie that you can watch once and you never have to watch again?
Oh, Seven. I can't watch it again. I watched Seven once. It was sublime. It was incredible. I will never watch it again.
I'm right there with you.
I cannot bring myself to watch that movie again. I saw it in the theater
Oh, you saw it in the theater.
I did. I saw it when it came out. I had just gotten a job doing tech support. We went and saw it in the theater, and I saw it with my buddy, and we talked about it at work the next day because we were doing support for Windows 95 on Compaq machines, but Compaq postponed putting it out. And so we had literally nothing to do. We're just sitting around on the night shift waiting for the go ahead to start taking these calls. And we talked about the movie Seven. And my buddy said that the final sin committed was Morgan Freeman's character was apathy. And he just goes, you know, that guy did not retire after the events of that movie because he learned that apathy was the worst sin. So he cares again. He's not retiring. And everyone's like, oh, I got to watch it again now. And I'm like, I will never watch it again, ever.
You say that and I'll be like, apathy it is. But I'm not going to sit through that one again. My original answer for this question when it was brought upon was Kids. And then I changed that answer.
I've never seen that movie.
You don't have to. That's what I changed it to. You don't even have to. American History X is my
original. Yeah, I'm not interested.
That one and There Will Be Blood. I think those are two movies that you can watch once. You pretty much don't ever have to watch them again.
Yeah.
As we do come to a close here, I always like to close with a listener movie recommendation, a movie that you love that you think the listener should go and check out and take the time to watch.
Okay, so I got a couple of these. I apologize.
No, that's all right.
Because there's not just one movie that's great, and there's different categories. So my favorite romantic comedy of all time was made in the 40s. And I know that you're going to say, I don't want to watch a movie made in the 40s because it's going to be pedantic. And but I'm telling you, it's called The Philadelphia Story. And it has Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant, and Jimmy Stewart in it. And you'll start watching it and think, God, this is so dated. And then you'll just kind of get lost. Have you ever watch a movie that's a Shakespeare story? At the beginning, you're like, I'm not going to be able to follow this. And then pretty soon, you're following Shakespeare and you're enjoying the movie. It's going to be like that, but it's such a good movie. It's one of my favorite romantic comedies of all time. And it's surprisingly modern, despite the fact that it's not, and that it was made in 1942, 44. I don't remember.
Interesting.
Now we're going to follow Catherine, O'Hara, to later in life, when she's older, and we're going to watch The Lion in Winter. The Lion in Winter is my favorite Christmas movie. So this is kind of like a play. So The Lion in Winter is about, I believe it's Henry II. Okay, so you know when you watch Robin Hood movies? Hold on. You know when you watch Robin Hood movies? And Prince Richard, the Lionhearted, is away, and the snivelly Prince John is in charge. Mm-hmm. And then Robin Hood fights him.
Sure.
Okay. They were the sons of Henry II. So Henry II had three sons. It was Jeff, John, and Richard. So Henry was kind of a shitty king. And he married Catherine of the Aquitaine, what's that?
I said Hunger Force.
Hunger Force. No, he married a woman basically for land, and she convinced her children to try to overthrow her husband.
Nice.
All three of them. And it didn't work. And so he locked her in a tower and only pulls her out for Christmas and Easter. And every Christmas and Easter, when he pulls her out, she and the kids plot to overthrow her husband.
Nice.
And so The Lion in Winter is Christmas 1183. And King Henry is about to announce who will succeed him at the throne. And he pulls his wife, Eleanor, out of the tower. And they spend Christmas together plotting against each other. It stars Peter O'Toole as King Henry,
Catherine Hepburn
as Eleanor. The sons are Anthony Hopkins, like in his late teens, early 20s. The guy that played King Arthur from Excalibur, he's Prince John. The Prince of France is played by Timothy Dalton in his very, very first movie role. Yeah. And that's it's just like an hour and a half of a dysfunctional family Christmas. Oh, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Okay. The next movie I want to recommend is my kind of feel good movie. It's a comedy. I'm in love with small towns and the concept of small towns and how everyone knows each other and everyone's kind of family. It's a movie called Nobody's Fool. It stars Paul Newman and Bruce Willis is in it. And so is
Melanie Griffith.
Melanie Griffith. Yeah. It was made in, I want to say it was made in the 90s, Paul Newman, 1994. So it takes place in a suburb of New York called Bath. It's fictional. But this guy, Sully, Sullivan, he's this kind of handyman that's kind of like the center of town of this community. And he's just kind of a degenerate, doing odd jobs and left his family when he was real young. And it's just this like a week in his life when his kid comes back to town for Thanksgiving. Anyway, it's a wonderful movie. It'll really make you feel good. It'll make you wish you came from a small town. And I think it's one of Paul Newman's best performances ever.
Yeah, made in the mid 90s, if I remember.
Yes. Philip Seymour Hoffman is in it as well.
I love PSH.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. There's just a lot of great character actors in the movie. Amazing lines, great delivery, really funny. Bruce Willis is great. Melanie Griffith is actually great. It's just a fun movie. It's just a feel-good movie.
All right.
Now my favorite horror movie. I recommend. I want to recommend The Mist. Thomas Jane and Marcia Gay Harden. So this is a Frank Darabont movie based on a Stephen King novel. Yep. And the premise of the movie is that there was some kind of weird thing happened at a military base. The mountain splits open and this mist comes down off the mountain into a small town. And inside the mist are terrible Cthulhu-like old god, scary fucking creatures that terrorize this town. But the amazing thing about this movie is the whole thing takes place inside of a grocery store where a bunch of people are kind of holed up trying to survive this entrapped. And how quickly they turn on each other. And the whole small little metaphor, just this whole thing, how quickly when you take away power and safety, like food, electricity, safety from people, how quickly they turn to their base instincts and whether that's would happen or wouldn't happen and the people that do and the people that don't. The monsters are all inside the grocery store, even though there are literal monsters outside the grocery store. And the reason why I also recommend the movie is that Darabont wrote a new ending to the end of the movie than Stephen King's novella. He ran it past Stephen King and Stephen King said, shit, that's better than what I wrote. I wish I had written that.
I
love it. I give my blessing, run with it. You will see a lot of people in The Mist that are alum of The Walking Dead, and that's because Darabont started The Walking Dead filming it and cast a lot of the same people. So yeah, it's really creepy, really intense, and really intimate. The special effects are pretty good too. Anyway, that's my horror pick.
Really quick, I will say, because I loved the story by Stephen King.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie?
Hated the ending.
Oh, you did?
I hated the ending of the movie.
Oh, that ending destroys me.
I thought the ending of the book was perfect. Hope.
You don't really know.
I like that, but that's the end of the book. The ending of the book was so perfect for me that I walked into the movie having already read the story. And yeah. I hated the end.
Listen, fair enough. I totally understand. I think that's fair.
Okay, so what's your next one?
My final one, I'm going to try to pick. This was really, really hard. I had to pick my favorite Western. I love Westerns. The go-to is Tombstone because I've watched it about a bajillion times, and Tombstone is a great Western. But I would like to recommend Quigley Down Under
with Tom Selleck.
Yes. So here's why. Hear me
out. Wait, are you sure you don't want to recommend Lightning Jack with Paul? With Paul,
I'll kill
Hogan?
You. And Cuba Gooding Jr.
And Cuba Gooding Jr. Shut up. You know it. Yes.
Yeah, I do know that. No. Quigley Down Under does have Tom Selleck in it. Yes, but it's basically, it is an American cowboy in Australia, and he's a sharpshooter that is hired to, by a rancher in Australia. And when he arrives, he discovers that the thing he was hired to shoot is not very palpable for him. But anyway, it's got great performances in it. It's got a great soundtrack in it. And it has a wonderful performance by Alan Rickman in it. Rickman is the villain in the movie.
I forgot Rickman was in it. All right.
He's in it. Yep. And it was filmed in Australia. It's one of my favorite Westerns, but it's also one of my dad's favorite Westerns, so I had to pick it.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. Those are my recommendations.
Those are some
I could give you more, but those are them.
I love the ones that you gave us. Those are some great ones, folks. You should definitely go check it out. As we come to a close, what do you have coming up? Where can people find you online?
Oh, well, they should go, if they want to see my comics, they should go to pvponline.com. That's where I do my daily comic strip. I am currently posting comics that are, so my daily comic is called PvP, and it's kind of about nerd culture and video games. But I'm currently posting a comic that I made about becoming primary caregiver for my father. It's called Mort, and I'm currently running those on the site. So when you get there, so it's not confusing, know that I'm currently running a side project. Also, I've done some graphic novels called Table Titans about a group of friends that play D&D and their adventures at the table and away from the table. You can read that online at tabletitans.com. And I also do a podcast where I interview people about the creative careers that they choose to try to maintain. It's called Surviving Creativity. And you can find that at survivingshow.simplecast.com.net. Hold on, I should know this. Survivingshow.simplecast.com. It's just called Surviving Creativity. You can find it anywhere you find podcasts.
Excellent.
That's me.
Perfect. And then you're also on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm at PvP Online on Twitter.
There you go. As we do come to a close, I always like to leave the show with a PMA, a positive mental attitude. Do you have a message of positivity or a personal mantra that you'd like to leave with the guests as we leave?
Sure. I would like to say that I know that it's been tough. A couple years between the Trump administration and then COVID hitting, it's been really rough for everyone. And I know that a lot of people turn to creative pursuits. If any of you do want to turn that creative pursuit into a career, that you should definitely go for it. But I want you to focus on loving the process and not worry so much about how you earn money from it, when it becomes your job or anything like that. That will follow if you just focus on loving the process of making the stuff that you make, making the best you can, getting better every time you make more, good things will come. So that's my positivity. And when you make something, when you become a sub creator, I think it brings us closer to God. And I think it helps people. When you make something and it connects with someone, it really, really, really helps. So put something out there, make something.
Awesome. Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure. I never say no to a podcast request.
And
I love doing podcasts.
That's awesome. And we would love to have you back then. And we can talk about that in a minute. But ladies and gentlemen, that has been another episode of The Last Podcast You'd Want. And until next week, tip the veal, try the staff, and we'll see you then.
Thanks for coming to see our show.
Sad to tell you, we got to go.
Grab your hat and head for the door.
It can't
didn't notice Harry anymore. This is like a show, tell everyone but me.